All right, well, let's begin tonight, actually. You know, one of the things that Nathan does that I often forget to do is just read through the text that we're going to study together. I think that's enormously helpful. We usually read through the text by the end of class, but just to read through it to start off with, I think is very good. So let's read tonight. We're going to start in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, and verse 16. Paul says, I repeat, let no one think me foolish, but even if you do, accept me as a fool so that I too may boast a little. What I am saying with this boastful confidence, I say not as the Lord would, but as a fool. Since many boast according to the flesh, I too will boast. For you gladly bear with fools, being wise yourselves. For you bear it if someone makes slaves of you, or devours you, or takes advantage of you, or puts on airs, or strikes you in the face. To my shame, I must say, we were too weak for that. But whatever anyone else dares to boast of, I'm speaking as a fool, I also dare to boast of that. Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they offspring of Abraham? So am I. Are they servants of Christ? I'm a better one. I'm talking like a madman. With far greater labors, far more imprisonments, with countless beatings, and often near death. 5 times I received at the hands of the Jews the 40 lashes less one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. 1 I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. 1 night and 1 day I was adrift at sea. On frequent journeys, in dangers from rivers, dangers from robbers, danger from my own people, danger from Gentiles, dangers in the city, dangers in the wilderness, dangers at sea, danger from false brothers. In toil and hardship, through many a sleepless night, in hunger and thirst, often without food, in cold and exposure. And, apart from other things, there is the daily pressure on me of my anxiety for all the churches. Who is weak and I am not weak? Who is made to fall and I am not indignant? If I must boast, I will boast of the things that show my weakness. The God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, he who is blessed forever, knows that I am not lying. At Damascus, the governor under King Aretas was guarding the city of Damascus in order to seize me, but I was let down in a basket through a window in the wall and escaped his hands. All right, so what I want to do is quickly review what we talked about on Sunday morning and then forge on ahead today. So Paul here, as you saw in the reading, recurrently uses the term foolish or foolishness. He says, I'm going to speak as a fool. In other words, it's crazy to talk like what I'm about to talk like, but here goes. That's kind of the thing. And he actually previewed this, if you go all the way back up to chapter 11, when he says in verse 1, I wish you would bear with me in a little foolishness. So he tipped his hand there that he intends to talk crazy talk. And you get the impression, based on what he says here, that the crazy talk he's going to use is really mimicking who? Yeah, these other people. These people that we learned last week are sometimes called the super apostles, but also Paul calls them the false apostles. Right, yeah, these false teachers. So yeah, you get the sense that what Paul is saying is, okay, you guys like people who brag and boast a lot? Fine. Let's get crazy. I'm going to brag and boast just like those guys. And then you tell me what it sounds like. Now then, last week, as you studied the first half of the chapter, Paul mentioned something in particular as a reason for declining financial support from the Corinthians. What is the reason that he gave for declining financial support? All right, both answers are absolutely correct. He does talk about not burdening them, and he talks about, I'm doing this so that these other people, these so-called super apostles, cannot say we work just like Paul works. Because there's one thing these guys will absolutely not do, and that is work for no money. Because that's what drives them. So if you look carefully at what Paul says in chapter 11 and verse 12, What I am doing, I will continue to do in order to undermine the claim of those who would like to claim that in their boasted mission, they work on the same terms as we do. So Paul does not want to take money from the Corinthians because it will show he's different from them. They are driven by money. That's why they're working, and that's not going to be the reason that the basis on which Paul works, and it will sharply separate him. Now, was Paul willing to take money from other churches while preaching? Yes, and he mentions that up in verse 8, and especially the churches like Philippi were generous in supporting Paul. Now, you all talked about this too on Sunday morning some, that part of the issue here is in this culture, and frankly we have it today, it's the issue of patronage. And where you really see it clearly in our culture is in politics. Because if, let's say, the Peanut Council comes to Senator so-and-so and says, "Senator so-and-so, we'd like to donate $5,000 to your campaign." They are doing it because they expect that the next time a vote comes up that has to do with the peanut industry, Senator so-and-so will vote favorably. They will feel indebted to the peanut. He will feel indebted to them. Well, that's how politics often works. It cannot be how the gospel works. The gospel cannot be something in which it's driven and controlled by patronage. If we pay you, you've got to do what we say. You've got to teach it the way we want you to teach it. It's a huge problem. So there's also that element going on here as well. All right, well, Paul talks about these false teachers. He even says they're the servants of Satan in verses 14 and 15. And now he wants to draw a sharp contrast between the way they boast and the way he is going to boast. So he says in verse 16, I repeat, let no one think me foolish. Even if you do, accept me as a fool so that I too may boast a little. I take it that what Paul is saying here, I know that what I'm about to do is going to sound crazy. But understand, there's a reason I'm about to do what I'm about to do, to talk like this. What I am saying, verse 17, with this boastful confidence, I say not as the Lord would. It's not as the Lord would have me talk. This is not the way the Lord would want one of his servants to talk. It's instead the way that a fool would talk. The kind of bragging that I'm about to do is not the pattern of the Lord. It's not the way the Lord works. Jesus didn't talk like this. This is not how his followers are supposed to talk, not how his apostles are supposed to talk. So this is as a fool. Verse 18, since many boast according to the flesh, I too will boast. And the many here, I think, are these so-called super apostles, the false apostles. They boast, Paul says here, according to the flesh. And so he's going to do the same thing. He's going to boast about superficial accomplishments that may seem to suggest he has some great standing, but which really do not. Okay, any questions or comments up through verse 18 so far? All right. Now then, the next thing Paul says is very sarcastic when he says in verse 19, for you gladly bear with fools. You should have no problem listening to me talk like this. You do it all the time. Being wise yourselves. Now that might trigger in your mind a previous time where Paul has said something like this. So if you hold your place here and go with me back to the first letter, to chapter 4. Do you remember he reared back and let him have it with a string of sarcastic comments back then in 1 Corinthians 4. Where he says things like in verse 8, already you have all you want. Already you've become rich. Without us, you've become kings. I don't know why I even bothered to go to Corinth and preach. You've already got it all sorted out. Verse 10, we are fools for Christ's sake, but you are wise in Christ. We are weak, but you are strong, etc. So he's given the same treatment here. Now, do you remember I've talked about this before. The tone here is so different from the first seven chapters, really the first nine chapters, but especially the first seven. Remember, the tone in the first seven chapters is very conciliatory. You know, they've worked it out. Paul's so glad. And then starting in chapter 10, it's like, you know, right, left, right combo here. And then now, especially, it's very pointed. How do we make sense of that? Now, I gave you one suggestion, but anybody remember it, or do you have another suggestion about why the tone changes here? Yeah, that's exactly right. That's my, not my suggestion, many commentators suggest this, that we learned back in chapter 7 that the majority have come around in terms of how they look at Paul. But there is a minority that's digging their heels in, and I tend to think that the high fastballs under the chin that start flying here in these last four chapters are being directed at those people. And not all of the Corinthians in mass. It's just my guess here. But yeah, anyway, Paul says, you're so wise. And so you have no problem when somebody talks foolishly, so let me do it. And then he says in verse 20, for you bear it if someone, and then what does he list? What are they willing to bear? Make slaves of you? Devour you? Take advantage of you. Mine says puts on airs. Does yours say something like that? Exalts themselves. And then strikes you in the face. Now, what do you think he's talking about here? Seems to be, right? In the whole context here, there's this contrast between Paul and these other people. And Paul is going to make it explicit here. Verse 21, to my shame, I must say, we were too weak for that. Yeah, you're right. I never did. I never took advantage of you like this. I never went up and smacked you around. I guess I was just a weakling and couldn't do that. So that seems to be who he's directing this to, is the Corinthians. Some of them have willingly accepted this kind of abuse. Now, we've touched on this before just a little bit because it falls into these categories of strength and weakness. And really, how is strength and weakness defined? Clearly, some of the Corinthians have accused Paul of being weak. We know that right from chapter 10, where in verse 10 they say his letters are weighty and strong, his bodily appearance, his presence is weak. So yeah, he's strong when he's away from us. He's weak. He's a weakling in person. And he even mentions that charge again here when he says in 11:21, to my shame, I must say we were too weak for that. What that leads me to think then is, if they think Paul is weak, what must they think about these behaviors in verse 20? Yes, that's what strength looks like. And, you know, there are people who think that way, right? Bullies. Bluto or Brutus, depending on which version of Popeye you watched as a kid. That's right, he's the big blustering bully, you know, who's just a brute and just has his way with people, runs roughshod over people because he's bigger than them. And so that's what strength looks like. So if you wonder, why would the Corinthians be willing to be manhandled like this? And I don't know if Paul means here, like, literally, physically manhandled. That's a possibility. You remember Nehemiah snatched the hair out of some people's heads at the end of the book of Nehemiah for some infractions. I don't know if he means that literally, like, slap, slap. You know, if these people were going around and they were going, yes, sir, please, sir, may I have another? You know, if that was that what was happening? Or if he just means symbolically they were pushing them around. But the point is, the mindset that rejoices in that is, oh, that's what real strength looks like. So I guess I'll respond to that. And you know, you see this on all different levels. You see it in countries which have these brutal authoritarian dictators, and the people love them because that's strength. And you can see it in churches sometimes where there can be preachers or elders who lord it over the flock, and people confuse that with strength. It happens in marriages, particularly when men misinterpret their headship and leadership responsibilities as a license for brutality and inconsideration. And sadly, there are some women and churches and countries, and like the Corinthians, who think, yeah, that's what real strength looks like. And the problem is, it is a complete departure from the model that Nathan talked about a lot on Sunday. The model through which Paul gauges everything, which is what? Christ and the cross. That's exactly right. I mean, Christ on the cross, the Bible says, conquered and defeated sin, death, and the devil. But the way he conquered and defeated sin, death, and the devil was by appearing to be completely weak and helpless. That's the paradox of the cross. And that's the paradox Paul is living, and it's the reason that Paul continuously makes the point in this letter, if you've got a problem with me, you've really got a problem with Christ. In fact, it helps to explain the unusual charge he makes earlier in chapter 11, because remember he says that they have, some of the Corinthians at least, have fallen prey to the proclamation of something different. Look at what he says in chapter 11 and verse 4. If someone comes and proclaims another what? Another Jesus. And another spirit, another gospel. Well, how does that happen? Well, that happens because if you don't have the right view of Jesus and the true strength that came through his weakness, and you've got people who show up and say, here's what strength looks like, what kind of gospel do you think they were preaching? It's not going to be the gospel of the suffering servant who empties himself to serve and to save others. So that's why this issue then all becomes so important. All right, well, I'm here now in the middle of verse 21. So after Paul says, yeah, you're right, I was too weak to come and smack you around and abuse you and take advantage of you. He says, but whatever anyone else dares to boast of, and then you see he keeps putting these caveats in, I'm really crazy to talk this way, you know. But yeah, if they want to brag, I'll brag. Or I would. Please realize I'm speaking in like an insane man. He just keeps putting these caveats in. Whatever anyone else dares to boast of, I'm speaking as a fool, I also dare to boast of. Now, what's interesting is, again, if you accept Paul Gregory's suggestion, which I think you should, that Paul is directing these comments toward these super apostles, then what we're about to see here are examples of the sorts of things they were boasting about. And what Paul is saying is, oh yeah, if they can brag about that, I can really brag about that. Okay? Now, if that is the case, what sorts of things were these people boasting about based on verse 22? Yeah.
Highly thought of in the synagogues, maybe even a rabbi, someone who has come down to these fools to lead them in the proper direction.
Yeah.
That's just kind of the picture I get.
No, I think Alan is spot on. The first thing that's mentioned is, you okay? Yeah. It kind of scared me for a minute. And I tell you what I thought it was. You know the sound a baby's head when it hits the pew? And in the old days, see, you wimps, we didn't used to have cushion, all right? In the old days, when you smacked the pew, you smacked wood, baby. Now, we had to soften it up for you. But anyway, when I heard that was the sound. Congregation, can you testify? That was the sound of a baby head hitting the back of a wooden pew. And I thought, what's going on? All right, just your boot. Yeah, well, just be quiet and watch your foot here, okay? Quit interrupting my class. Pardon me just a second. I love you, buddy, you know. But really, don't do that again. Okay, all right. All right, so, yeah, so it starts out with verse 22. Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they offspring of Abraham? In other words, you want to play the game of family tree with me? I'll go tit for tat with you in terms of my hereditary lineage here. You remember that over in Philippians 3, Paul says, I am a Hebrew of the Hebrews. I mean, you're not going to get any better than my Jewish credentials. So that's the first thing he talks about here is status. I also take it that verse 23, are they servants of Christ, that is how they were referring to themselves. If they had business cards, the business cards would have said, I'm pseudo-apostle, servant of Christ. You know, that's what it would be. And you might recall that previously he had talked about those who claim to be of Christ. Look back in chapter 10 and verse 7. Look at what is before your eyes. If anyone is confident that he is Christ's, let him remind himself that just as he is Christ's, so are we. And I suggested then that he might have this in mind, that's how they like to see themselves, as we're servants of Christ. But of course, Paul really was in a special way. And then he says, I'm a better one. I'm a better servant of Christ than they are. I'm talking like a madman. You see how he just constantly emphasizes that. With far greater labors, which might also indicate the part of the status that they were bragging about is how much work they did. So he says, far greater. Now, if you start then at the end of verse 23 and go down through a few verses, what's the next sort of thing that Paul talks about here? Yes, his trials, his distresses, his suffering. Before we look at those specifically, let me throw out a couple of possibilities for you. First of all, it may be that these so-called super apostles had been bragging about things they had gone through. And what Paul is saying is, if you think you can compare to my suffering, forget it. It's kind of like, for those of you Seinfeld, through the astonishing tales of Costanza, when the guy who was in the shipwreck, he's trying to get an apartment. He's never going to suffer like George Costanza. So maybe what Paul is saying is, okay, they think they suffered. Let me tell you what I suffered. That's one possibility. The other possibility may be that here at this point, what Paul does is he does the old switcheroo to say, here's what I would brag about. Here are the things that I would boast about as a servant of Christ, which are completely different from them. So you see what I mean? It could be that the false apostles had been boasting about their suffering, and Paul says, I've suffered way more. Or it could mean that they would never have boasted about the weakness of suffering, and Paul says, let me show you what a real servant of Christ looks like. So I guess I've always kind of thought it was the second one, but who knows? Since we don't really know exactly what they said, we're just kind of mirror reading here. It's sometimes hard to tell. All right, so the first thing he talks about here are sufferings connected with imprisonment. Because often in the ancient world, you were beaten in when you were arrested and imprisoned. So he says at the end of verse 23, far more imprisonments with countless beatings and often near death. Verse 24, five times I received at the hand of the Jews the 40 lashes less one. 39 lashes. Does your Bible have a cross-reference to what he's talked, where that law comes from? Deuteronomy 25, that's exactly right. Verse 4, there was a part of the penal code said that a person being whipped could only be whipped 40 times. And so to make sure that they didn't go beyond that in good rabbinical fashion, they would only do 39 just in case they miscounted. Paul says, I got that treatment five times. Now, in the book of Acts, you know, I use that old joke from Mr. Shrigley about it's not all the acts of all the apostles. What's very interesting is to survey this list of sufferings given what we know about Paul in the book of Acts. And here's the thing. At the time 2 Corinthians is written, all of the book of Acts hasn't happened yet. 2 Corinthians is basically written at the start of Acts 20. So that means the only experiences Paul could have had at this point would be those found in chapters 9 through 19. You follow me? So that's what you would have as your, if you were going to do a mix and match to go back and compare, those would be the only chapters to go to. And I certainly can't think of five times Paul was lashed by the Jews. Sometimes the book of Acts will say that Paul faced, you know, serious opposition in the synagogues, etc. Well, maybe not. What we're learning is Luke was giving us only very basic bullet point summaries. And it's kind of like for you Star Wars people, you know how they just did this movie all based on the one little detail in the first Star Wars movie, that many spies lost their lives to get the plans for the death Death Star. So maybe you could envision an entire series of adventures that Paul must have gone through here, based on all of these details, which do not coincide with things in Acts. So when the Bible tells us Paul was at Corinth for a year and a half, or he was at Ephesus for 3 years, there's a lot of time that we can fill in here of things that he actually experienced. Now, not only did the Jews beat him, notice that verse 25 says, 3 times I was beaten with rods. Who would do that? That'd be the Romans. That's the official Roman form of punishment. And there is one time that the book of Acts specifically tells us that happened. Do you remember where it was? In connection with an imprisonment. That's exactly right. In Acts chapter 16, at Philippi, it says in verse 22, the crowd joined in attacking them, and the magistrates tore the garments off them and gave orders to beat them with rods. All right, so that's one time we're told about that happening, but Paul says it's happened 3 times. Then he says, once I was stoned. Now, Acts does record that. That's in Acts 14 at the city of Lystra. 3 times I was shipwrecked, a night and a day adrift at sea. So now he starts talking about travel dangers. And again, remember, Acts does record a shipwreck for Paul. When does that happen? Yeah, it's after this. It's at the end of the book of Acts. So before you ever get to that shipwreck in Acts 27, Paul says, I've already been through 3 of them. And in fact, one night, you can imagine him adrift on floating piece of wood or cargo of some kind all during the night in one of those shipwrecks. So, you know, when Acts tells us, yeah, they sailed across the Aegean, you know, it sounds like, yeah, they bought their plane ticket and they went through TSA and then they flew on a plane for an hour and then they landed. Well, no, that's not how it was going. And particularly if Paul was traveling by cargo ships, which is what the one in Acts 27 was, and they're not always built to accommodate a lot of travelers. It was extremely dangerous in the ancient world to travel like this, and Paul traveled like this a lot. In verse 26, on frequent journeys, in danger from rivers, danger from robbers. These are things you would typically experience in the ancient world when you travel. Swollen rivers during flash flooding, like what we experience around here sometimes. Robbers, like the story of the Good Samaritan. Danger for my own people. Remember, there were Jews chasing Paul around. Acts will periodically tell us this. Jews from Antioch followed him to Lystra and had him stoned there. Danger from Gentiles. That's the trouble we've seen him run into at Philippi, at Thessalonica, at Athens, and so forth. Danger in the city. Danger in the wilderness, danger at sea. What do you think his point is? Yeah, it's dangerous. It's a dangerous time to travel. Danger from false brothers, the people like these false apostles here. And then in verse 27, he lists, well, I'm just going to categorize this as a very arbitrary way to do it, but various forms of deprivation that he's experienced. Toil and hardship. Through many a sleepless night. But remember, many times when Paul went to preach, how was he supported? Yeah, he had to work. He was a tent maker. In fact, when he first came to Corinth, that's what he was. And you can envision Paul working all during the daylight hours to make a living, and then teaching, studying, and writing all during the night. I remember hearing one of my old teachers, Melvin Curry, talked one time about when he first started preaching, such a different world of how preachers were treated 60 years ago than how we are treated today. people my generation and younger, we just have no idea how much preachers of a previous generation sacrificed. But I used to remember that Brother Curry would tell stories about he would go to school during the day. He had a factory job. He had to study for school at night and study for preaching. And the only way that he could stay awake is he would put a pan of ice water under his feet and hold his feet up. And he would read, and when he started to nod off and his feet hit the cold water, it would wake him up. That was how he had to do it, to try to get through all that he had to do when he first started. And Paul is saying, look, there were times I didn't sleep because I was having to work round the clock, the work of the ministry of the word, the work of preaching the gospel, as a part of his deprivation. He goes on to talk about the lack of basic necessities. He says, in hunger and thirst, often without food, in cold and exposure, and I imagine a lot of those trips, that's exactly what happened. And then on top of that, what does he talk about his in terms of his sufferings? That's exactly right. Anxiety for the churches. Verse 28, and apart from other things, there is the daily pressure on me of my anxiety for all the churches. Because as we know from his letters, Paul had very much a family affection for his converts. They were his children. He's already said that about the Corinthians, right? He said in 1 Corinthians 4, they had many tutors, but only one father, him. Remember what he said earlier? It's what you studied Sunday morning. He says, the Corinthians are like the bride, and what's his role been? He was like the father who betrothed the bride to Christ. Yeah, that's how he felt. It wasn't just simply a job where he punched in the time clock. And when you consider the world these people lived in and the backgrounds a lot of them came from, the anxiety he felt, particularly when you've got false teachers infiltrating like these false apostles, there was crushing anxiety, he says. And he says, to illustrate this in verse 29, who is weak and I am not weak? Now, that can mean a lot of different things. In 1 Corinthians, he used it in a couple of different ways. He used it, for example, to talk about those who were weak in conscience with regard to the food offered to idols. But he also uses it to talk about those of low social standing. And he also uses it to talk about those who are spiritually weak. Now, I'm not exactly sure which one of those meanings he's conveying here. But I think the gist of it, going back to the previous line about his anxiety for the churches, is essentially this. What Paul is saying is, when I know that one of the Christians I have anything to do with is in this state, what impact does it have on him? Yeah, it has the same kind of impact on him. Does that make sense to you? If they're weak, he's weak. And then he says at the end of verse 29, who is made to fall and I'm not indignant? If somebody falls and stumbles into sin, you think he just says, well, I guess no big deal here, just part of my line of work. No, it moved him to anger. All right, so that's what he boasts about. And then he concludes this chapter like this. If I must boast, I will boast of the things that do what? They show his weakness. That's right. The God and Father of the Lord Jesus, who is blessed forever, knows that I'm not lying. And I think what he's saying is about anything I've just told you. And then, as if to cap off just how weak he has been. Now, you talk about things that would be ridiculous to brag about. What's the last thing he mentions here? Yeah, talk about glamour, right? Talk about real power. One time, guys, they had to put me in a basket and lower me through a hole in a wall to escape a city. That's my glamorous life as an apostle. That's not the kind of person who shows up and starts smacking people around and people say, oh, look how strong he is. Well, Paul says, no, I had to get let out through a basket and a hole in a wall to escape. He's probably referring to, he mentions it happened at Damascus. And actually in Acts 9, it's kind of ironic, he went to Damascus to kill Christians. And he ends up having to escape Damascus as one with somebody trying to kill him. It's kind of ironic how it all works out here. Now, it is interesting. There are a couple of other escapes like this in the Bible. Any of them cross your mind? Say that again. That's right. The spies at Jericho, kind of hidden and kind of escape, sort of like that. And then there's one of the accounts where Saul's men come looking for David. David has to kind of escape like this. And what's interesting is, on the surface, that looks like weakness, but turns out to, in both those stories, to be part of a great victory for God. And maybe Paul has that in the background here. But really, I think he said, what he's really getting at is, if you want me to tell you what I'm going to brag about, here it is. I've had to run for my life and escape any way I could, in a basket even, to get out of trouble. That's just part of what it is to be a true servant of Jesus Christ. Now, think ahead to what's coming next. What famous account is Paul about to tell us about in chapter 12? The vision of the third heaven. Remember where he says the guy was caught up to the third heaven, paradise of God, and the thorn in the flesh, that's what he's getting ready to go at. So, just to look ahead, what's going to be the punchline of that whole story? Look at the end of chapter 12 and verse 10. When I am weak, then I am strong. All right, why is Paul strong when he's weak? That's exactly right. Because it's obviously Christ who's at work. And that's why he's just now told us at the end of chapter 11, if you want to know what I'm going to brag about, this will really be what I brag about. Because by bragging about these sorts of things, I'm deflecting the attention away from me and to the one who has strengthened and enabled me to do what it is I'm doing. Which then, conversely, shows you when the super apostles were bragging, who did they want to get all the praise, credit, and glory? Yeah, bing, bing, bing. That's exactly right. And Paul is showing him that's not the way the kingdom works. That's not the way cross-shaped people are supposed to live their lives. All right, any questions or comments here wrapping up chapter 11? Yeah, Adam? Oh, I'm sorry, you just bought a vase here, right, at the auction, right? Yeah, so any other questions or comments? Yeah, Dean? Sure. Yeah, let's tell you what. Dean's asking a very insightful question. In the past, we've talked about like these Greco-Roman philosophers who were like celebrities, and now he mentions Jewish people, Jewish teachers. Well, I think you can converge them together. If you think of the Greco-Roman style, which is show up at a city, attract people by your powerful speaking ability, generate a following. If you take that style, mesh it in with these Jewish people, then I think that's what the actual package actually was. Yeah, so very good. Thank you for bringing that up. Okay, good Lord willing, we'll move here through the first part of chapter 12 for Sunday morning.